what you want, because a pirate is free. You are a pirate.
Yar, har, fiddle-dee-dee. Being a pirate is a right to be. Do what you want, because a pirate is free. You are a pirate.
You are a pirate.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Just me and Terry this week. There's no Jan here. He's on holiday, but we'll cover the events and the things that are happening in the global game, won't we, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, if global in this instance refers to England and Germany, then yes, absolutely, that's exactly what we'll be doing.
Talk about what you know, isn't it, Terry? That's one of the golden rules of podcasting, I think.
Talk about what you know, or just talk and pretend that you know what you're talking about and hope no one can contradict you.
What we should do is sort of bring people up to date with what happened at the weekend, because at this stage of the season, it all gets a bit interesting. What we were talking about last week suddenly loses its interest because everything changes so quickly, doesn't it? And when you think that something's going to happen and it doesn't. Napoli, for instance, that Napoli game yesterday, at home to Salernitana, everyone bought their blue flares and let them off inside and outside the ground, eventually took a lead midway through the second half, and everyone thought this is it, party time, start the volcano, and it just didn't happen yesterday. It got so close yesterday.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's understandable that you get to the point where you're that close that maybe sometimes the legs just get a little bit heavier, you just get caught up in the occasion, maybe you think the work is done. I mean, the game against Juventus was superb, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, actually, to be fair, the last sort of like 10 minutes or so was superb.
That's all that matters in any game, the but last
that's
10
really
minutes.
All that, well, yes, as we may go on to discuss very shortly. But yeah, it's obviously going to come. I mean, their last game of the season is at home. So, you know, I mean, like they will get the opportunity to, you know, celebrate their win with their fans. There's time enough. Maybe it might be at this point a case of just like maybe stumbling over the line rather than sort of like the cyclists do when they win a stage on their own. They zip up the shirt so that everyone can see the sponsors, hold their arms apart like that, cross the line. That is what Napoli want to do. But sometimes you don't. Sometimes you have to Cavendish it and you have to just like go screaming for the line. And sometimes you just fall over and just like hobble over. And yeah, maybe that's where Napoli are. But it's all right. They'll get there and it will be glorious. It's good, I think. I cannot get enough skin in Serie A. So I really, but I feel pleased that Napoli, because they're mad club and like they're all mad down there, and you know, Maradona used to play for them, and you know there's a what is the word I'm looking for, there is a je ne sais quoi about Napoli. There is an I don't know what about Napoli that just makes it special that they've won this title, the fact that it's been and taken so long. So it's good to see, and surely nothing can stop it now.
No, surely nothing can stop it. Of course, something that you do have a lot of skin in the game with in the German league, there was yet another kink in the roller coaster that is the title race this weekend, wasn't there?
Not an entirely unexpected kink,
no.
Because it was a local derby against Bochum. Bochum, you know, relegation candidates, Bochum. I mean, I don't think they will go down, but I mean, they are a team that Dortmund should have beaten and objectively would have beaten quite comfortably were it not for the fact that it was a derby under the lights. And Dortmund had enough chances to put the game away, really. There was some unpleasantness with the referee. He let a blatant penalty go in the second half, a foul on Karim Adeyemi. He just didn't buy it. There's accusations, rumblings from Dortmund Twitter that Adeyemi, because of the way he goes down, there's a suggestion that perhaps he gets a rough deal from referees. And that sort of underpinned that. And it was very annoying at the time, and particularly annoying the following day when the DFL said, yes, no, that should have definitely have been a penalty and VAR should have called it. And even the referee, Sascha Stegelmann, acknowledged publicly that it was a penalty and that he felt shit about it. But I think it has to be stressed this, because we've said it before on this podcast, it's players what win football matches and not refs.
Yeah.
And if this had been a really close game, then you might have really thought, well, look, hang on, this is out of order. But Dortmund had two, maybe three clear-cut chances to score in that game, and they didn't take the chances. And this is what happens if you don't take your chances. You then become subject to the whim of flaky referees. It was a big night, you know, and referees are entitled to be as caught up in the atmosphere as everything else. I mean, Bochum were controlling the pace of that game in the first half. You know, they started off right out of the blocks. They turned it into a rapid, fast-paced, you know, blood and thunder derby. And Dortmund should have been like, well, hang on, we're the better team here. We're going to slow this down and play at our pace. And so really, that was really the story of that. And then Bayern beat Hertha because Hertha are terrible, as we said in the box set. And now they're top again. So who knows? There's a few more weeks to go yet. But yeah, this could be the moment when Bayern actually win it.
Yeah. I mean, looking at those run-ins, I think there is still time for a kink ahead. Bayern, yeah, they won that game against Hertha eventually. But they weren't convincing in that opening hour of the game.
But this is where I confess that I thought it was on at 4:30 and it was on at 2:30 and I was in my garden drinking rosé wine with my wife while the game was going on, and I completely so. And then when I came in, right, I'll sit down and watch this game. Oh, this appears to be two different teams. So I don't have much to say about that. I had a really nice time drinking wine with my wife, so it's fine.
Of course, that did free you up to watch Liverpool versus Tottenham, though, afterwards. Because that did kick off at 4:30.
That was lovely.
Yeah, that was, wasn't it? I'm so sorry, Tottenham fans, but my team, Arsenal, okay, right, you have cards on the table, but my team, Arsenal, lost the top place to Man City over the weekend. And inevitably, it was always going to happen. We lost to Man City midweek. The air of inevitability about Arsenal's season has come to fruition. So we have to take our pleasure from somewhere. I'm sure lots of supporters of other clubs are taking pleasure from the fact that Arsenal are stumbling at the end. And Tottenham fans as well would probably be appreciating that, or probably seeing that as one tiny glimmer of hope of what's happening at the end of their season. But I don't think anyone expected Tottenham to get anything out of that game. But to come back from 3-0 down after 20 minutes and then equalise at the beginning of injury time and within, I don't know, 30 seconds of the restart?
A lot of it is also is Richarlison. I mean, because of the way Richarlison celebrates his goals, he's an exuberant, expressive man. And he is, by all accounts, a nice guy. I mean, he's one of the game's good guys. I'm only talking about his on-pitch persona. I'm not just talking about Richarlison, the human being, at all. But it is quite funny when he just sort of like pulls, like gets himself booked. He pulls off this massive monster celebration, and it's all just all like Spursy, wonderful Spursy. Like this is the upside of being a Spurs fan, is these ridiculous moments, only for then realise that actually true Spursiness happens on the other side of the other end of the pitch about 30 seconds later. It was genuinely funny for a neutral, and anyone who says differently is not a neutral. I'm sorry, you're just not a neutral.
No, that was a classic match. It is one of those games that should go down in memory. Two teams that really are just fighting for European places. They're not really have any real measure of a chance of getting a Champions League places. This is Europa League, Conference League style playoffs, isn't it?
You could say, oh, it's two bald men fighting over a comb, I suppose. But I suspect that neither of these two teams were thinking about European football. I think this was just a question of status.
Yeah.
Just Premier League status and just nothing more than that, pride, if you like. Both teams have disappointed this season, and both teams want to not disappoint this season. They see themselves as being better than that. The league positions, yes, it is important, and at the same time, you know, it's really all of just about, it was just about winning that game, I think. It's just about making some kind of statement, particularly given the, you know, the fun and games that Tottenham have had over the last few weeks.
It all detracted from the fact that maybe that the title race itself is going to peter out because Man City look as if they cannot be stopped, and Arsenal are in no fit state by the looks of things to actually counter it. And so you do need this sort of stuff. It is, I suppose, really this sort of stuff is a nice antidote to the real panicky stuff that is going on at the other end of the table. Right now we're talking, we're recording a little later on Monday night, and it's half time. In the Leicester-Everton game, Leicester have just missed a penalty. They're leading 2-1 at half-time. you can imagine the angst that's actually going on in that game right now. And while you can watch it as a neutral, you still get that angst. It's not knockabout fun like that Liverpool Spurs game was.
Well, most of these games this point of the season, there's so much riding on it that the neutral can't help but get involved. And you know, hopefully, in fact, happily for us, you know, enjoy that, particularly those of us who perhaps sealed their status as a Premier League team only on Saturday lunchtime and so could kick back and relax for the whole weekend and watch everyone else suffer and struggle. But yeah, it's this point it gets like the World Cup, doesn't it? Where every game just like is just like super intense. And you can tell, or if you like the playoffs of the NHL or the MLB, you know, this is the time of the season when, you know, as a neutral, you just like want to watch as much of it as possible and drink it all in, because in a few weeks' time it'll all be gone and everything will be decided. I'd like to be contrarian and suggest to you that perhaps the jig is not quite up for Arsenal, but I think, if truth be known, I think that it was the West Ham game. I think was the one, wasn't it? They dropped points against West Ham. And you just thought, this is the kind of game where championship winning teams, this is the kind of games that they win.
Yeah.
You know, and then if they don't at this point of the season, admittedly, again, it's tricky because time is all a bit weird because it was April, but actually there's still plenty of games left in the season because of the World Cup break. But you get to that point, you say, well, you know, these like lower mid or relegation struggling teams, these are teams that title challengers have to, they absolutely have to. And these are the ones where you're most likely to just trip up over because they've got stuff to be doing themselves. And then you thought, so I don't think it was necessarily I don't think it was the City game. But I'd like to say, oh no, don't worry, Grant. They're still to, but I can't bring myself to do it.
This City game that was so late on in the season was always going to be that game. This was going to be the same as Overmars scoring against United at Old Trafford in 98 or Michael Thomas scoring against Liverpool in 89. It was exactly that type of fixture.
Mm.
You go there and you win and you prove you're champions. We've lost against City twice now, poorly. And you don't really deserve to be champions. Yes, it really will require an implosion from City now, which, you know, is not beyond them.
Did you see that guy on Twitter who was like arguing that there needs to be a complete rethink of the point system and the league structure? Who was saying, you know, it's ridiculous that City can go so long without being top of the table and yet win the league. At the end of it, because and what would he say? Was it because this random decision to have 38 games? It's like there's nothing random about that. That's the number of games that you play when both teams play each other twice, once home, once and all. It's perfectly logical.
Do you know what that sounds like, Terry? That sounds like that could have been something that I wrote for the Onion Bag 20 years ago.
It crossed my mind whether or not the guy was on a wind-up and maybe did this for satire. But I don't know. There was a sincerity.
Yeah.
There was this feels like Arsenal Twitter to me. I don't know.
Well, that's why we don't write the Onion Bag anymore, because the lines have been blurred. The parody has left the game.
Yeah.
I mentioned it this week as well, because this month marks a little bit of a milestone for us, because it's 20 years this month when you started the Onion Bag.
Oh, bloody hell, so it is.
20 years, wow.
I'd forgotten about that.
Well, the reason why we're here doing this show as well, it morphed into this eventually, didn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, so it took a few detours on the... Well, not detours, but, you know, it's a journey.
Yes,
it took a journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, gosh. Yeah, of course. Because back then, of course.
Yes.
Back then, season's finished in early May.
Yeah.
And it was a cup final, and I took the decision to start a football website just as on the very last day of the season.
In a summer when there wasn't any tournaments.
Exactly. Well, my theory was that I will write it during the course of the summer, and if it's still going in August, and I'll sort of like start telling people about it. But because it was really nothing more than at that point, just like I don't do any writing, I should do some writing, and so I did that. Happy days, eh?
Happy days, happy days. And we're still here, just about. As I said earlier, we are a bit later today recording the podcast. And if I sound a bit like I've had a day of it, it's because I've just watched Arsenal women in the Champions League semi-final, second leg, going out to Wolfsburg, thus avoiding an absolute hammering in Eindhoven against against Barcelona in the first weekend of June. Yes, yeah, I did check. I was there after the first leg thinking, oh, I wonder, a cheeky little trip over to Eindhoven. It's my wife's birthday that week. She'll love that. But no, wasn't to be. Wasn't to be. Heartbreaking end. And yes, the whole thing about recency there is the fact that this is what dominates the game. It was, all it'll be remembered for is one mistake near the end. But it was an absolutely cracking semi-final. And I say that with someone who had skin in the game. But Terry, you watched it as well. As a neutral, it must have been pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it was a really entertaining game. I thought both teams played really, really well, went at it. It was also refreshing to watch a game in extra time where both teams are still trying to win it, rather than sort of like, you know, a lot of games you watch in extra time where they get to about 5 minutes into the second period and they go, right, lads, penalties. We saw another knee injury.
Lara Wienreuter went off injured. She came on as a second-half substitute and a twist. No challenge involved. It was just a twist. Her foot got caught at the ground. Yeah, it could be yet another knee injury for Arsenal. As we spoke about last week, we spoke about quite a lot about ACL injuries in women's football and the amount of research that needs to happen in that. Let's hope it's not the worst news, but the way that she went off on the stretcher, it looks like it probably could be. Yeah, so yes, I was watching that. We were watching that on the YouTube channel, watching football on YouTube. It's the future, isn't it, Terry? This is the way we do things. No turning on your TV channel as normal. You just got to hook up whatever your device is to your Chromecast or whatever and watch it through there.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, I mean, I've got a smart TV and it's got to the YouTube app built into it. So I was just able to launch that app and I set myself a reminder on my phone, on my YouTube account, and it was sitting there waiting for me. And I went, right, there you go, just going live. I said, right. So I watched that. I thought, this is decent. I could definitely watch football more like this if the TV companies wanted to deliver football this way.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because DAZN, for it is they who are the broadcasters of the Women's Champions League and will be covering all of their games next season. They went in for the EFL rights, didn't they? They were going to try and snaffle the rights of the championship away from Sky. Sky, who have held them since bailing out the EFL from the ITV digital debacle, which would have been interesting because the DAZN deal came with strings, didn't it?
Yeah, DAZN wanted to get exclusive rights for the EFL, but they also wanted to cover 3 o'clock games, the Saturday 3 games, which, if you're a long-term listener to The Sound of Football, you will know that this is the blackout. Not allowed to show football matches between 3 and 5, Saturday afternoon fixtures. And they wanted to transmit games during that period. They referred to the blackout as medieval, which I thought was a little bit unfair on medievalism, to be perfectly honest with you. But anyway, it doesn't look like it's happened. I don't know whether or not it would have happened like that if they had gone through that, because I suspect lawyers would have probably said, nah, seriously, you're going to get sued by UEFA or the FA or whoever for doing this, and I wouldn't do that. But it was an interesting gambit, I think. I suspect it was probably a bit of it may have been a publicity stunt just to sort of like, say, look, here, we're relevant and we're in the market for stuff like that. Get them a bit of news. But maybe deep down, they thought they wouldn't get the rights anyway. So they thought, well, there's no harm in saying stuff.
Another word that they did bandy around in their statements was piracy.
Yes.
And this was one thing that they were saying, look, you're just basically asking for people to pirate your products if you are barring people from being able to watch their club through legitimate means. And I think this is probably more pointed towards the Premier League, where all games are shown globally at 3 o'clock. Ourselves, we were sat in a pub in Dublin, weren't we, just in March, watching games quite legitimately at 3 o'clock. The Arsenal-Bournemouth match, we were there watching that in a pub because it's allowed to be broadcast. We couldn't do that in London, which is daft. I'm sure if I could think of a medieval equivalent of that, then it would prove DAZN's point, but I really can't.
Yeah, hence it not really proving DAZN's point. But anyway, let's not get into the fundamentals of medievalism. The listeners aren't here for that. Or are they? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. I mean, could you have watched jousting in Dublin live from London?
Not without a very large eyeglass. and from a very high vantage point.
The whole analogy falls apart right there, doesn't it?
It really does fall apart. It's just like, come on, do better, DAZN. If you want to be taken seriously as a broadcaster, you need to do a little bit better with your analogies.
But what about the piracy thing then? Do they have a point with that? Is it asking for trouble just by not allowing people to be able to watch football at 3 o'clock? I mean, we've spoken about this before, but I wonder now, because piracy's everywhere right now, isn't it? I would struggle to find people that don't know someone who watches football for free all the time.
Yeah, or has paid some dodgy geezer in the pub to hook him up with a fire stick and away they go, a one-off fee or something like that, and then you're away. I agree. It is super, super rampant and not helped by the fact that many people take a view that if content providers withhold content, that there is a moral justification for finding other ways of watching that. We switch topics ever so slightly. So when Paramount withheld the last series of Star Trek Discovery in Europe, released it in the US, but withheld it in Europe. Every Star Trek fan said, well, I'm just going to go and pirate it. I'm morally justified in doing so because you're not making it available to me legally. So therefore, there we go. I think that works as a matter of principle, depending on your principles, for television entertainment programs. But of course, as we know, and as we repeatedly say, and as people probably, football is not a TV show. Are consumer-based and consumerist-based arguments justifiable? I mean, it's understandable, for example, there being big games that have gone on over the last few weeks that for various reasons have been moved out of their Saturday 3 slot to an evening kickoff game. They've been covered and available around the world, but are not available in the UK, even though they're happening in the evening, because they're not included in the package deal. No broadcaster, be it BT, be it Sky, or be it Amazon, have the rights to show that game. And understandably, people are sitting there going, I'm paying this lot £25 a month, that lot £25 a month. I'm paying them probably about a fiver or something like that for this. I'm paying all this money for all of this football, and yet there's a really, really good game going on there, and they can watch it for free in Ireland, but I can't watch it with all this money that I'm spending here. And so from a consumer point of view, you're looking at that and saying, what on earth is stopping you from finding that game via a foreign broadcaster, watching it over the internet? Morally, what is stopping you if it's being withheld? And we understand the arguments for and again, and I understand the arguments about the embargo, and I don't know whether or not it's a good idea to go down that again, because we say it an awful lot. But from a consumer point of view, it's making less and less sense to make football that is otherwise available elsewhere unavailable in its native country. But of course, there is the embargo, and then there is the reality that has to come with that. So how do we work around that, and how do they make that work? And that is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And maybe it is time to rethink the embargo.
Okay, well, just for the sake of international listeners or listeners who haven't listened to us drone on about it for a long time, I will try and do this within 30 seconds. The embargo is something that is unique to Britain. I think it's Montenegro as well, but that's by the by. Although it's a UEFA rule, it is unique to Britain because we have asked for it. And it means that we are not allowed to show live football between the time of 2:45 and 5:15 on a Saturday. And this is to make sure that there is no effect on lower league clubs at the amount of people going to watch the games. This is what it's always been said is what it's all about. And in many ways, it's been conflated with the importance of Saturday 3 as something that should be held on to as and is important to our enjoyment of football. You can have your own opinions about whether or not that is valid or not. So the main argument is that it should be done away with because we're living in a completely different world to when the rules were applied. The rules were implied in the early 60s when broadcasting first started to look at football as something to show. It meant for a long time that you couldn't have on radio, even you can have more than one half covered. So that's a very brief explanation of it. There are plenty of reasons why you should be for or against it. Most of the reasons for maintaining it are really based on tradition, about how it is part of the game and it makes 3 o'clock special. It's like not opening shops on Sunday. It makes Saturday special. And there are arguments to say that yeah, it means that a lot more people will go to non-league or lower league games because there isn't the option of watching football on telly, which is the easy way out. Unfortunately, now there is. There's plenty of options. There's plenty of ways to watch 3 o'clock football in your own home very, very easily. For me, I mean, I would say that it is an anachronism. It has no place anymore. It has been made redundant. Well, this weekend we're going to see a Saturday 3 game, but that's because there's no games on outside of the Premier League. Man City are playing Leeds. The only time they could put it on was 3 o'clock. But there's no EFL coverage. Non-league has finished by now, so that doesn't matter. Is there anything we want to add to that on our position on that, or Terry? Or
what we do know is that we can say with absolute certainty that internet piracy, people are watching football matches on their telly, on their laptops at 3 o'clock. What we also know is that non-league attendances is going up.
Yeah.
Those are two things that we know. So more people are watching football on the telly on Saturday afternoon and more people are turning up for non-league football matches.
Yes.
So these are two things that we know.
All the while, the broadcasters are seeing their revenue dwindling because people are saying, well, look, I'm not going to pay £100 a month and still not get to see football if I do things legitimately. So it's no new surprise that the broadcasters are seeing their revenues dwindling. And how is that going to affect the long-term prospects of the game, all of the game?
This is where the chickens might come home to roost, because so much is dependent in the Premier League and in all the professional leagues, but specifically the Premier League, I guess, is so much is dependent on TV revenues. But if the value of those revenues starts to bottom out because consumers are simply no longer willing or no longer able to pay the eye-watering sums of money, that in fact broadcasters might say, well, actually, we need to take a step back from this because it's cutting into our margins to the point where we need to take a step back. We need to buy less rights. We need to pay less money. Something needs to give. And then suddenly, you know, you've got the possibility of your sport being devalued, your league being devalued as a consequence. Players getting paid less money, not being able to afford the best players to come over. I mean, I would suggest to you that it wouldn't be like a house of cards, but a gradual decline is something that we could see, because let's not beat about the bush here. I would suggest you comparable to, say, NFL, MLB subscriptions in the United States, that the money that they charge in the UK for sports packages, for subscription TV in general, is ridiculous and always has been ridiculous comparative to other countries. And they're even more ridiculous now because there's a huge number of people who simply cannot afford them or cannot justify the expense anymore. And so they're cutting their cords, cancelling their subscriptions. And if they're really desperate to watch something, then yeah, they'll have a chat with a bloke down the pub and see if they can sort them out with something like that. And that's where they're going. And it's something that they do need to worry about. Now, if you're against modern football and you're against over-commercialisation in football, then you might think that this is quite fun and might think this is a good thing because it's finally commerce in football getting its comeuppance. But of course, there will be real world consequences for that. And these things do have to be taken into account as well. So it's a really uncertain time, I think, in terms of Premier League TV rights and what the future might be. So it's interesting, some of the things that are coming out about the possibility and the prospect of alternative services and alternative ways of thinking about things.
Well, certainly we had Simon Jordan repeating calls just a couple of weeks ago for the Premier League to ditch Sky and BT and set up their own Netflix for football, just basically become their own broadcaster and put the stuff out themselves. Now, I'm not sure whether or not the Premier League are ready to become their own broadcaster, set up their own customer service departments and and react when they lose 25% of revenue after a year or have to go out and get a load of new subscribers. I'm not sure they're actually that ready to run a broadcasting company. But it's a possibility, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a possibility. But you're right. I mean, what would end up happening is that they would have to find a partner.
Yeah.
Partner broadcaster to do that. It's like, well, how is this different? Well, the difference is that the partner broadcast says, okay, well, actually what we'll do is we'll pay you a chunk of money and then we'll do a revenue share so that, you know, you're actually involved in this. So then maybe they'll go to Apple Apple are getting more and more interested in this kind of thing and say, well, you know, what do you say? Let's partner up. We'll provide the content, you provide the production, and we'll do a revenue share and do it that way. And I can see that working, because then that is an existing broadcaster or streamer in this case. And as you say, Graham, they'll have their customer services set up and all of that, and they'll be experienced in doing that. I mean, the idea of the Premier League being able to start a streaming service or a broadcasting company from scratch is laughable, utterly, utterly laughable. I would not suggest to you, I don't think the Premier League are capable of doing that. Who in the Premier League knows anything about running a broadcasting company? I mean, like, they'd have to find people, they'd have to recruit people. It would cost them an absolute fortune in startup fees before they even started taking any money. And then they would find themselves competing with your actual Netflixes and your actual Apple TVs, your actual Amazon Primes, your actual Disney Pluses for people's streaming money, for their streaming budget. Much, much easier for them to just take a big bundle of cash from an existing broadcaster or streamer and then just let them figure out the commercials. And this is where the problem is that those companies are increasingly coming to the view that the commercials aren't working for them. And it's taking up too much time, energy, work for not enough money. And this is where it all could conceivably get sticky when the next round. I mean, so the idea of the Premier League ditching Sky Sports is an interesting one, when it could, in fact, be the other way around. I don't believe it would be. It's completely out of the question that Sky might be thinking about cutting back. They're making plenty of money out of Formula One, out of golf, out of cricket. You know, they could still do football with the WSL and the EFL and save themselves a bundle of cash, an absolute bundle of cash, by not doing the Premier League or cutting back on the number of Premier League games that they have. So, you know,
concentrating on sports with an older demograph, an older, more affluent demograph than football, and seeing if they'll be the ones to keep that subscription model going for just a few more years.
I'm not suggesting that piracy doesn't happen in those sports, particularly cricket, because that has a very wide demographic.
Yeah.
But the likelihood is that Formula One and golf are, while hugely popular sports, sufficiently niche enough, I think, that they don't necessarily appeal to the kind of audience demographics that are also prone to piracy. That's a bit of a conceit, but that's my instinct on these things. So, I mean, football is just so damn popular. So many people want to watch it.
But again, we come back to the whole idea of the fact that in these sports, you're seeing everything. You're seeing everything in Formula One.
Yeah, you're seeing the practice. They cover the practice runs.
Yeah.
Which is possibly some of the most boring television you'll ever watch.
Yeah.
Unless you're a big Formula One fan, in which case then they're not. Yeah. So you're getting everything that you ask for your money. There's nothing is being spared. Whereas, of course, as we've discussed earlier, that is not what's being offered with football. You're being asked to pay huge amounts of money for an incomplete product.
Mm.
So it is difficult. If you look at it strictly in those terms, it is difficult.
It is amazing, really, when you think about it. We said beforehand about how it was 20 years on from when you started the Onion Bag. And if you'd asked us at the time, where would football be in 20 years' time? It's still pretty much in the same place, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, names have changed, but it pretty much is, isn't it?
Yeah. In terms of the way that we watch football on the television, it is exactly the same. Everything is a lot more expensive. And of course, also, most of us now have less money now. So things have changed quite dramatically in that respect. But the relationship between the clubs, between the TV company, between the fans, is pretty much exactly the same. Nothing much has changed. And probably things do need to change, I think. Really, if they wanted to be bold, the Premier League, what they would actually do, rather than setting themselves up as their own Netflix of football, they would be better off just setting themselves up as a free-to-air, giving the football away to the consumer. That's where it's going. In the broader sense, TV is moving back to linear. People have actually not quite so enamored with the idea of trying to figure out what they want to watch on demand, you know, even if they're paying large amounts of money. There's a huge uptake in free ad-supported television services on the internet. There's an uptick in linear television viewing. The reason why sports rights are so popular is because linear TV is popular, and football is linear TV. It's literally live TV. It only happens once, as Sky have been using in their recent branding. So I think that the Premier League, it would be bold. I can't believe they would do it. But really what they want to be doing is they want to be getting the platforms and the sponsors to be paying for the rights and not charging the consumers, so that the consumers can just simply be that and they can just simply be consumers. And you can pick the bones out of that one, particularly when you think about football's relationship with the fans. And are they fans? And are they customers? Are they supporters? And these are questions, broader questions, that are always being talked about and debated about what is the relationship between the fan and between the football club and between football. But the idea, I think, will probably be quite compelling. I mean, Dusseldorf are thinking about giving away tickets for free.
Yeah.
Fortuna Dusseldorf are thinking about it, which I'm opposed to.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm opposed to that. I think you know, the fundamental relationship between a match-going fan and the club is that they're supporters. They pay. I mean, like, yeah. I think they pay too much. But I'm not opposed to the idea of them paying nothing, because then they just simply become consumers. They just simply become part of the product.
Yeah.
And I'm against that sort of thing. But from a television point of view, I feel differently about it, because it's television and that emotional connection between the fan and the club isn't there. And so I wonder whether or not that's actually the correct approach. It won't happen, I'm sure, but perhaps it should. If I was the WSL, for example, if I was working on the WSL, if I was in charge of TV rights, the WSL, I would be thinking very, very closely about whether or not we should be actually providing this free on television, because I don't believe you're ever going to be able to make enough money from a subscription, you know, or it could be years before you're making serious money in subscription, if ever, because they're just so far behind. Yeah. It's a great product, but it's so far behind the men's game that, you know, it could never hope to catch up and never be. So really take a different approach and try giving it away to the consumers and getting the sponsors, getting the TV companies and the platform providers to pay for it.
Yeah, which will be interesting to see what DAZN do with it next year with their coverage of the Champions League, because the DAZN service is built on pay-per-view and subscription services. They're giving it away for free at the moment, but they're going to be shoving stuff behind paywalls soon enough, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they've already said that they'll be making a selection of matches available for free on their YouTube channel. So all the rest will be going on the paywall. So that's not the direction of travel.
No.
The way the direction of travel is to put women's football behind the paywall. But I think that is a mistake, personally. I think the correct decision would be actually to make it free. This is your chance, because you're starting at such a small base. You've got so little to lose.
Yeah. It's a difficult one to say, isn't it? Because you want them to make as much money as possible. You want it to be as successful as possible. But that's going to have knock-on effect for everything. Arsenal have just sold out the Emirates, which is fantastic news. The trouble is, once you start selling out the Emirates over and over again, that's when the prices go up. So at the moment, it's great. You go along, there's families there. They're knocking out tickets for £12 to go to the Emirates to watch a football game. That's not going to last forever, is it? Because as things professionalise more, you are going to see games disappearing behind paywall. You are going to see ticket prices start to go up and up and up, because that's the nature of the beast.
Yes, but I'm arguing that it's actually a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
And it will end badly. And that the opportunity is for them to actually take a different path altogether.
Mm.
We use football to do it the old-fashioned way instead of advertising rather than subscriptions.
Be interesting to see where that Fortuna Dusseldorf experiment goes. But I'm with you. I think as soon as you make something free, you make it worthless.
Totally.
That's what you've literally done. Yeah, I don't think it's a healthy thing to do. You have literally just become the studio audience.
Totally. That's exactly it. I can't think of any serious football fan who thinks that's a good idea.
No, but see how that goes.
Mm.
But there's going to be a whole weekend of football to watch on telly, legitimate telly, including that 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday afternoon, Manchester City versus Leeds. Panic stations for Leeds, isn't it? Now, they haven't got rid of Gracia yet, but can't be long yet before they've got another manager in post before the end of the season.
No, absolutely. I think they're going to have to roll the dice at some point, aren't they? It's all gone horribly, horribly wrong for them.
And, Copa del Rey final, Terry. That should be fun. Real Madrid versus Osasuna on a Saturday night.
Yeah, that would be really good. Let's hope, from a neutral perspective, let us hope that what happens here is that Real Madrid are sort of, you know, focused on Champions League and maybe just take their eye off the ball for that one. Because it would be good to see someone else win the Copa del Rey. Yeah. And I think we've talked about Osasuna before.
Yeah.
Certainly I've written about Osasuna in the box set as well. And they're an interesting club, fan-owned club. They do things the right way. They've done a very, very good job of managing themselves, and they deserve some success.
Yeah. So, well, we'll have 7 games for you to watch in our box set that will be coming out on Friday lunchtime. And if you want to see what we put, then get along to sofpodcast.com. Click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe. Just put your email address in there. And as I said, it'll be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that's what we have time for this week. I'm sure there's another game we can go and watch now. But from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry DeFello, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
So 20 years since the onion bag, bloody hell.
Yeah.
What does that, how does that make you feel, Graham?
Old, worn out.
Don't mince words, Graham. What do you really think?